Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, this is Peter Paul Barzola, and it's the 12th of January, and our theme, for those who don't know, or one we usually play, is Hector Berlioz's March to the Scaffold, and I guess there's some politicians who are concerned that if it doesn't happen before November, or in November, it'll happen sooner, and they'll be marched to the scaffold, and it's long overdue and well-deserved for certain ones of them. Excuse me. Still getting over a cold. Today in history, very interesting day. Stephen King, kind of ironic, those of you who are into that horror stuff, it's his birthday, and a guy nearly killed him. A guy named Brian Smith nearly ran over him and nearly killed him. He also died on King's birthday. So that's Stephen King, the white guy who is Caucasian, who's the writer of all those horror stories. It's also the birthday of Samuel Bronstein, a great movie director, and some of the films that he did are relevant to the history of today. For instance, he did Brigham Young, and of course, a lot of people don't know that Senator Harry Reid is a Mormon. I don't know if he practices or is what they call a Jack Mormon. I used to go with a Jill Mormon, a Mormon girl, many years ago when I was in school. Bronstein, who was a legal immigrant from Romania, as was the guy who was in the paper chase, I guess I'm getting old, who also worked with Orson Welles. Anyway, they were both Romanian Jews, or Jewish ethnicity, I don't know if they practiced, but Bronstein did quite a few films, 55 Days of Peeping, with Ava Gardner, David Niven, and Charlton Heston. He also did El Cid, which ties into the Inquisition and the Muslims, which we'll get into later in the program, and that starred Charlton Heston. It was about the guy who drove the Muslims out of Spain. They had been there since 1700. He also did Fall of the Roman Empire. That wasn't with Charlton Heston. That was with Irish actor and Sir Alec Guinness. Great film. And he did King of Kings with Jeffrey Hunter, who had a heart attack. And he did. And today's the birthday of one of my favorite authors, one of the great American authors, Jack London, who was born here in San Francisco. And we'll put up his birth site on our YouTube Amicus Veritas site. You're welcome, and you're invited to go to that site. We'll be updating it. We've just got some new software, and I try to warn people, if you have 32-bit on your computer and you get software that requires, that you don't know that will require 64-bit, you're not going to be able to use it. And many problems I learned the hard way, and the software has not kept up or has gone ahead developments in computers, and it's expensive to cost about $150 to add 64-bit Microsoft to your computer, unless you buy it online from one of the discount houses. But that's something you ought to be aware of. Bronstein also did John Paul Jones, who was the great film, the father of the American Navy. Although some people debate that John Barry was the father of the American Navy, but he was a contemporary of Benedict Arnold, and today is the an anniversary of Benedict Arnold's betrayal. He sold the military plans of West Point to the British, and then when they found out, he had to flee to the English side, and he became a general in the British Army. The Brits never trusted him, or the English, as it were. So it just shows you that even the people that are the most highly respected in their field can turn traitor. It's an interesting birthday today also. The baby didn't live long, but it it's an indication, it's something we should look at if we get Reed Care or Obamacare. This is the birthday, she only lived about a year, of Alicia Di Matteo, an Italian baby, who was the first major transplant. She had 8 transplants, 2 kidneys, a stomach, 2 intestines, pancreas, a couple other things she had. She only lived about a year, but something to think about if you have a child or you need a transplant, what will Obamacare or Reed Care or Pelosi Care cover or won't cover? So this is kind of interesting because it ties in today with this child's death. She was from Genoa, Italy, lived in Florida for a while so they can monitor her. Excuse me. Also, today is the interesting birthdays today. Those of you who like conservative talk show hosts, it's Rush Limbaugh's birthday. Those of you who hate shock radio, it's Howard Stern's birthday. And the singers, we have Glenn Yarborough. Never mind. I'm getting a little slow here. We also, and this is another military hero, Ira Hayes, a Native American. He was in the famous photo shot by Rosenthal, who was a San Francisco native of San Francisco, lived here, and just died last year, in that famous Iwo Jima raising of the flag. And there's an interesting story behind it, but we don't have time to get into it. But Ira Hayes was born today, and he died about 2 weeks later, 24th, I think, or 31st of January. We'll honor him. Native American from one of the reservations. Also, it's the birthday of John Singer Sargent. That is a connection to a famous interview that I did with a woman who was part owner of the Oakland Raiders. She married, I think, the son or one of the grandson of John Singer Sargent, probably the greatest of the early American painters. And, of course, those of you who are familiar with insurance, that famous building or infamous building in Boston where the wind blew out all the glass, John Hancock's birthday today, and also his was the largest egotistical signature on the Declaration of Independence. And those of you who follow history, it's the birthday of Alfred Rosenberg. I don't think he was Jewish, or he may have been. He was a Nazi theorist, was engaged in ethnic cleansing and mass extermination of Jews and other Untermensch in Russia, and he was hanged after a trial at Nuremberg. Excuse me. Still got this cold. And let's see, who else died today? Oh, Virgil, the great Roman poet. Charles V was a Habsburg. He didn't speak Spanish, but his son was Philip II, who started the ill-fated Spanish Armada to try to kick out Queen Elizabeth I and return England to Roman Catholicism. Charles V was one of the few people in history, one of the few rulers, of whom it was said the sun never set on his empire. And today also is the death of Sir Walter Scott, those of you like Ivanhoe. And then we already did with Bryan Smith. Also today, Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormon religion, supposedly received a visitation from that angel. I'm not really into Mormonism, but those of you who respect that religion or are interested in it, this is a significant date. And considering some of the politicians who are involved in conning the public, like Harry Reid, it's really interesting because in the history of the Mormon religion, for years they denied equal rights in their religion to blacks who were considered the son of Ham or descendants of Ham. And it's only recently, in the last, I think, 10 years, that they accepted blacks into their priesthood or whatever you want to call it. But all these years, they have sent out their missionaries, their young men, to countries where there were dark people, let's put it that way. And maybe that's one of the things about the Mormons. that Mormon youth are supposed to go on, I think, a year's mission in the missions and to try to convert people. In San Francisco, they're very leery because they usually send in these apple-cheeked, good-looking young males who the gays hit on, and, of course, they're aware that this is, in their mind and a lot of other people's minds, kind of a Sodom, modern-day Sodom and Gomorrah. Really isn't. The gays only, homosexuals only represent about 150,000 people, but they're very well funded by various closet pedophiles and people into child pornography and video spy camming. We'll get into that another day. In the Stephen Neri case, a lot of things have come up and they're now coming to fruition and exposure. But the Mormon youth, maybe that's why they're so successful in business. Also, Senator Orrin Hatch is a member of the Mormon faith. And I think there's several others. And some who, I think a congressman from Arizona, was also, his father was a Secretary of the Interior, Stuart Udall, in the John F. Kennedy administration. It's interesting, I have on the schedule, should we Medicare and the hospital and healthcare be financed by national lottery? A lot of people don't know that over 40 United States states have lotteries of various sorts, and some are mega lotteries when they've combined with other states with these multi-million dollar prizes, and it's very big. Interestingly, Utah doesn't have a lottery, and I don't think Wyoming does. Mississippi and a couple other southern states. Of course, Mississippi is one of the only states, there's a county in Texas which banned alcohol. I always joke with people. I said, "Do you believe in the Bible?" And they said, "Yeah." So, do you know the wedding feast of Cana? And they look at me and they say, "Yeah." Well, when the Blessed Mother or Jesus' mother went to Christ and said, "My son, they don't have any wine," and he didn't want to do anything, but she prevailed on him. And so what he did was turn the water into wine. So I said, if Christ could do it, would you rather have the reverse, that a water, Perrier, be turned into, a wine be turned into Perrier? But they didn't see that joke. But anyway, something that nature created. And, of course, if you don't enjoy it or don't partake, I always say there's more for people like myself. But that's your privilege. And also, don't drink to excess. I always say, sip, don't swill. And as Churchill said, he used to sip claret and swill claret and sip one of the sweet wines, Portuguese wines. And on the subject of Portugal, why it's so interesting. Oh, I want to finish with the Irish sweepstakes. Now, the Irish sweepstakes started back in 1933 to fund the impoverished Irish hospital system, and by Irish Ireland, I mean the Republic of Ireland, not Ulster. And what the government did, I think it was Eamon de Valera, who, interestingly, his father was Spanish, and he fought, and his mother was Irish, and he went to Ireland about the time of the Easter Rebellion after World War One, and fought with Michael Collins to kick the Brits, the English, out of the Republic of Ireland. And he was sentenced to death until they found out that he was an American, so they couldn't shoot him. And but one of the founders of the trustees of the Irish sweepstakes was a an associate of Michael Collins, who was murdered by one of his assassinated by one of his followers or adherents. There's a great movie about him, Michael Collins. I recommend that. It's very accurate on English history and Irish history, and he was one of the great men in the history of Ireland and to free the Republic of Ireland from Britain's abusive yoke. But anyway, what happened was they set up these trustees to run this Irish sweepstakes, and what it was the tickets were sold, and they were sold all around the world. The most of them were sold in the United States, and when I worked for the federal government, one of my jobs was to intercept these sweepstake tickets coming in to Chicago. And what was interesting was my bosses and some of my fellow workers were selling those very tickets. There was a lot of counterfeiting of those tickets. That was one of the problems. They sold for about $2, and people who were teenagers in the 60s, 70s, probably remember them. They were very big in the Irish neighborhoods, the sales. But there was a lot of fraud, and that was one of the problems. But, and it did raise a lot of money, but the problem was they didn't manage it well. But of the worldwide sales on those tickets, after the winning purses were paid out to the people holding the tickets on horses that either won, placed, or were shown. And those of you who are familiar with horseflesh, Ireland still breeds some of the finest horses in the world. In fact, the Queen of England goes over there to look at the horse stock. And in fact, there was a famous IRA kidnapping of a horse. One of the most famous horses of Ireland was kidnapped, and it was never recovered. They held it for ransom. They may have killed it and turned it into horse meat and sold it to the French. The French are very big in what they call cheval. If you go to Paris or French towns, you will see carcasses of horses. And, of course, a lot of Americans like eating dog. We just don't do those things. But during World War II, because there was not meat or there was rationing, a lot of people, my grandfather, grandmother, and some of my aunts, ate horse meat. So I guess it's a cultural thing. I wouldn't touch the stuff even when I was in France. I was appalled. It's just like dog. It's even worse in my book. But people did it when they had no other alternative. In the movie, one of the movies with Charlton Heston, a cartoon which was about the British General Gordon, who was trying to keep Khartoum out of the hands of the Mahdi, the Muslim extremists, and there's a long history with these Muslim warriors. He had these camels, and they were running out of food in Khartoum, so his beloved camel, which had, he walked around the desert with, he finally told him, well, it's the end of you, my friend, and he had to kill him for food. So that people even ate camels, and this was English, and the English had this thing about eating dog meat and horse meat, and I guess even, but they ate camels when there was no food in Khartoum, and that's another cultural taboo. And dog, there is a worldwide campaign to stop dog eating and dog kidnapping, and especially big in Korea, and also I think in the Philippines. And it's just there are groups that rescue these dogs And even in Taiwan, I know of a case here in San Francisco, a dog was rescued from Taiwan and brought to the States, to San Francisco. So it was quite a journey for that animal. Beautiful, not a Shar Pei, but it's one of those Chinese dogs. But its life was saved from the butcher shop. Also, what happened, there were so many scandals with the Irish sweepstakes that they canceled it, or they abolished it, and a new Irish lottery was set up in 1988 to fund not only the Irish hospitals, but a lot of social welfare schemes. And the Irish Irish government officials have responsibility, and it's still around. And anybody, you don't have to be a resident to play. Your winnings are tax-free, and you have to claim them within, I think, 90 days. Otherwise, you lose the money if you have one of the winning tickets. But they expanded the recipients of the winnings after the ticket holders were paid off, and the Minister of Justice, the Minister of Social Welfare, and one other Irish government official oversees this new Irish lottery, which was set up in 1988. But my point I'm trying to bring up is, if we have all these lotteries of the states, why can't we have a national lottery? Now, it's illegal. It's a federal law that all kinds of gambling material is banned from entering the United States, whether it comes in, someone's carrying it, trying to carry it through customs or through the mails or internet, and some of these, ticket shops or whatever. So all of that international gambling is supposed to be verboten. Now, there is these phony Canadian lotteries. People are getting these tickets, these invitations in the mail and sometimes through the web. So beware of those. But we do have it in California. We have it in New York, Maine. New Hampshire and Vermont were the first three states to do a multi-state combo. So, I mean, if the states can do it to fund some of their budget shortfalls, and why can't the federal government start a national lottery to try to fund the enormous health care costs and Medicare costs? It's a thought. And also for veterans. The veterans in this, veterans have been ripped off for years, not getting the medical care that they were promised and which they were entitled to. People like Art Burnclaw, who was working for years, Drew Raines. By the way, you should go to his website and his blog talk radio, A Marine's Disquisition. It's heard daily. I can't do a daily thing. I was asked to do it, but it's just too much with all my other projects that I'm involved in. But, you know, these are government obligations that could be funded by a national lottery if it was well managed. So it's a thought, and you might contact your congressman if you buy lottery tickets or you think it's a way to help fund all these shortfalls that all the states and municipalities are undergoing right now, and it might even get worse. Now, the other thing that's important, and we're seeing this spectacle here in San Francisco of the what I call crotch politics. The gays or homosexuals, the people are very upset about the word gay being used to describe these people because they co-opted the word, claiming that it is their civil right to be married. Well, if you believe that marriage is a sacrament, then that, and that there should be separation of church and state, then these people, then these activists are all wet, to say the least, and astigmatic, to be kind. The other problem with this, if it is a civil right, then what about the people who believe in polygamy? Is it their civil right to have multiple wives? Is it their civil right to marry underage girls and boys? Do the Muslims and the people in, who adhere to Sharia law, is it their civil right, if they are Americans or living in America, to have Sharia law marriage here? There's something seriously wrong with this whole idea. The other problem is you have to look at government intervention and government co-opting of religion throughout history. And the reason I bring up the Inquisition started in the 12th century by the Catholic Church to stamp out a French heresy called the Albigensian heresy. Then the kings and the politicians and the people who wanted the assets belonging to Jews and Muslims decided to prevail on the Pope to let the civil apparatus of the state get involved in Inquisition. And what happened was the Jews in Spain and Portugal they had a choice. They were told to convert conversos, and that gave them an opportunity to participate in the political and economic life of those countries. But Isabella, she funded Christopher Columbus, or was supposed to, and Christopher Columbus himself was supposed to be Jewish or have Jewish forebears. Anyway, this was an opportunity for them to wipe out the aspirations of Jews and take over their property and exile them. And even if they converted to the Catholic faith, they were tortured and executed anyway. And if they kissed the cross before they were burned at the stake, then they were strangled to prevent being burned alive. This is something that happened to Joan of Arc, which was another mess where the state made this deal with the church to condemn her as a heretic and for wearing men's clothes. She was supposed to be strangled before she was burned at the stake, but the fire was too hot, and so she was truly burned. But a lot of this this started as a religious thing within the Catholic Church. Interestingly, the Inquisition, it was horrible in Portugal. There's a famous movie about how they tortured people and what they did to Jews, and there's another movie just out, Goya's Ghost. I highly recommend it, about the Spanish Inquisition and how the brother of Napoleon Bonaparte, who he set up as the King of Spain, Joseph Bonaparte, abolished the Inquisition. And it wasn't until the middle of the 18th century that the Inquisition was abolished in Spain and then later in Portugal. But Portugal is very interesting because they were one of the first to get involved in slavery. And in recent times, they were one of the last colonial powers I think in, like in Portugal, Goa, and some Madagascar, I think that was Angola, excuse me, where they horribly treated the natives, the Africans, horribly and had those awful wars. And they later became anti-clerical. The Lady of Fatima, that's a famous movie with, she just died, Jennifer Jones, a 40s movie, how they were anti-Catholic and anti-church and during World War One. But they have a terrible history dealing with religious minorities, the Jews, the Muslims, and also Portugal and Brazil were among the last countries in the world to abolish slavery. And if you look at Brazil today, there's a joke that the blacks, people of African descent, most of the blacks there are from Africa, although that's one of the big myths that all blacks are Africans, and they're not. You'll see blacks from Sri Lanka or Old Ceylon, blacks from India, blacks from one of the islands, Negritos, in the Philippines, and there's the Sioux were called the Blackfoots. You know, one of the tribes here in North America. So, but anyway, they even in Cuba, which is also under the Spanish yoke, slavery was abolished late, but you will not see the descendants of these blacks in the upper echelons of government. Yeah, Raul Castro, I haven't seen a black as a minister in his government or Fidel Castro, and you don't see that in Brazil. But we do have that beautiful musical history and the contributions of Bossa Nova and Jobim and all of these people, beautiful women, who contributed to the world's musical enjoyment and culture and entertainment. But you don't see them in politics. You don't see them running the military. You don't see them, I don't think there's been a black Catholic bishop or cardinal in that in Brazil. So this is, so they still have the residue of that. Interestingly, Elizabeth Taylor starred in a movie about Arturo Toscanini, the great Italian conductor. He made his career substituting. He was a young cellist, and the conductor was lousy conducting an opera in, I think, San Paolo. And Elizabeth Taylor played the soprano, Aida. And she did this thing on the air. She was very upset about how Brazil was treating the blacks, and the Emperor of Brazil, Dom Pedro, was in attendance, and she stopped the music. Arturo Toscanini, I think it was C. Thomas Howell, was playing the role. She stopped the music and said she is giving all of her jewels and her money from that performance to a fund to help free the slaves. So the emperor got PO'd and walked out, and his retinue followed him. But the audience was applauded her efforts because the Brazilians were very brutal towards blacks and slaves. But I want—I think we covered a lot today, and I always bring up the birthdays and the events to tie them into in the birthdays and events in history to tie them into what may be relevant today. And so I hope people enjoy that. We will. I've had requests to play some music that is related, and we're working out a format because this is not basically not a music program, but there are musical selections that have a historical significance or historic connection and significance. But I would recommend that you go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. I should be putting up some new video verite, as I call it. And then our guest coming up, I think it's Thursday, will be Al Santoli, who has worked in the Philippines, former congressional aide. He was one of the people who helped start the expose on the violations of Stephen Neri's rights, the U.S. Navy sailor who is now in California prison nearly 14 years at a cost of an estimated $15 million. And we'll get into how these costs were calculated. Very interesting. $10 million went for a building to honor a sexual predator who was nearly alien and a supporter of terrorism. Anyway, I want to thank you all for tuning in and listening, and tune in Thursday at 5:30. This is Peter Paul Brizola, working with the new shadow. And email me at pbrizola@gmail.com. If you have suggestions, criticism, we don't always like criticisms. And if you have suggestions about some guests, we're getting some other ones, and I'll be translating some of the tapes that I did with famous people and interesting people, like how did Patton treat his veterinarian? Very interesting. excuse me. So I want to thank you all for listening. And so tune in Thursday at 5:30. This is Peter Paul Verzola working with the New Shadow. And have a good evening. And we're not going to play March to the Scaffold or March Off the Scaffold. Good night. Mm-hmm.